B, I think.
That's what I thought.
Okay. Somebody, staff.
Welcome, everyone. I will call the Senate Committee on Rules to order, and we're going to go out of order today and start with a public hearing on HCR 13. Sheree.
Madam Chair and members, House Concurrent Resolution 13 recognizes and designates an official department of the state of Oregon. There are no amendments, and fiscal and revenue paperwork both indicate no impact associated with this measure.
Okay. Representative Doherty is here to join us.
We have another bird bill.
Welcome.
Thank you very much. Chair Burdick, Vice Chair Farioli, and members of the committee, I'm Margaret Doherty, and I'm the state rep from House District 35, which is representative of Southwest Portland and Tigard. The official state symbols have played a very important role in recognizing the important contributions made to Oregon and the great folks that call Oregon our beautiful state home. In Oregon, we have recognized a variety of symbols, significance of importance, including the state mushroom, the state rock, nut, microbe, fruit, crustacean, beverage, fish, dance, and of course the beloved state animal, the American beaver, which, by the way, was written by my assistant, who is a graduate of Oregon State. Now the time has finally come for Oregon to officially recognize the rich history and contributions of Oregonians of Scottish and Irish descent by officially adding the Oregon tartan as the official symbol. I would have the Oregon tartan here, but my assistant who has the Oregon tartan tie is not here. But one important contribution that comes to mind is from David Douglas, the Scottish botanist who the Oregon State tree is named for. The Douglas fir shares its name with David Douglas. Or maybe you've heard of John McLaughlin, the official father of Oregon, also of Scottish descent. Currently, the Scottish Registry of Tartans has already recognized the official tartan of the state of Oregon, so it is appropriate that Oregon also recognize its own tartan. The tartan recognized by the Scottish Registry of Tartans, and the one I propose we officially recognize in Oregon, is truly emblematic of the Oregon and our gorgeous landscape. The tartan's colors include blue, representing the blue flag of Oregon, the deep blue waters of the ocean, the fishing industry, the deep blue lakes, and the major inland rivers. Gold represents the center color of the Oregon flag and many of the varied agricultural regions of our state. Green represents the many and varied forests. White representing the beautiful snow-capped mountains. Taupe representing the high desert and the grasslands. Crimson representing the fiery volcanic past and the cinder buttes. Azure representing the streams and creeks, the wetland marshes, the shallow lakes, and the wide sweep of Oregon skies. And the black representing the obsidian buttes. To close, I would like to thank Rob McGregor of the High Desert Celtic Society and the New Caledonian Society of Bend for designing such a beautiful representation of Oregon in its tartan, and I urge your support of HCR 13, which, by the way, passed the House unanimously.
Thank you.
I'm open for questions.
Senator Roblin.
Yes, I was wondering if you had something against the Campbell tartan.
Against the what?
Campbell tartan.
Yes, I do.
Okay, thank you.
But I do not want to go into detail because it would embarrass Mr. Campbell.
Okay.
Yes.
Mr. Campbell is signed up.
He is going to testify.
Yes. He is going to testify. Yes, yes, he is.
Senator Boquist.
Well, since I'm not Nancy Pelosi and have 2,000 pages, what does this thing look like? Is it online?
Yes, in fact. May my assistant approach the bench? This
is the start of my modeling career.
Yes. This is what the Oregon State tartan looks like. And so it's got the blue and the green and the yellow, the azure, the gray.
So which is the azure, since I'm not really a azure?
That's this
the azure
color.
Azure.
That's what I was trying to find.
Is azure blue?
Yes.
This
so like
color.
If you're deep eating blue. A French dip sandwich and get it on you azure or whatever.
Yes. But anyway, that's the deeper blue.
Ah.
Yes. Where Representative Roblin comes, they have the deep blue seas and the rivers. And where I come from, the Tuolumne River's not blue, but yeah.
Well, okay. We're leery of these sorts of things because we've been caught between the meadowlark and the vulture.
Yes, you have. So far, what it was is that this tartan, in 2003, actually, former Governor Kulongowski, there was a resolution to recognize it as the Oregon State tartan, and that was this one. But it was never made official. as an official state tartan. So like there is no other tartan to compete with this one.
It sounds exactly like the metal art.
So to pursue that point, there's no tartan, because the first thing I thought of was the competitive aspect, but there are many tartans out there. And so what makes this one special?
Well, first of all, it is already recognized by the Scottish Register of Tartans in Scotland. And so when it was designed in...
Recognized as...
The tartan of the state of Oregon.
Oh.
And so it is already recognized in the National Registry.
And when did that happen?
That happened in 2003. And some people already thought it was the official tartan, but actually it was more of a resolution that recognized this design as the Oregon tartan. So that's been around since 2003.
Got it. And the other...
right here.
Sandra Boquist?
So was this a keg of whiskey? How did the Scots decide what we were going to do in Oregon and Scotland in 2003?
Well, I think that actually Mr. Campbell can go through and talk about the importance of the tartans to the Scottish clans. But there is an international registry of all the clans and all the... Because what it is, and I don't know if he's going to explain this too, but you've got clan tartans, which are the people like Campbells and McGregors and so on. And then you have sometimes like a state tartan or a country tartan. And so they're split, and you're supposed to keep loyalty to your own clans, which means we will keep loyalty to ours.
And not his.
His.
No, Campbell's. He's behind you.
No. No, but he will have to wear his clan tartan.
This is sounding more like the metal lark, the vulture, and the osprey at this point.
Yes, I can guarantee you that there will not be a controversy over this plaid and another.
Oh, I would so hasty.
That's what we thought about the osprey.
I'm voting no in committee just so I don't have to carry the bell. Okay?
Yes, but I'm if it makes it through rules on the House side, I'm prepared to speak about the osprey.
Okay. Madam Chair.
Senator Farioli.
In point of fact, the Oregon tartan is made up of old cloth. There was no Oregon tartan until some enterprising person gathered up a series of colors and designs and hide them hence off to the Scottish Registry and applied for the Oregon tartan. Oh. So it is, in fact, a construct. And, Madam Chair, I'm glad there's crimson in the Oregon tartan, because that will be the faces of the legislators who vote for an Oregon tartan in this session.
Yes.
That we have so much on our plate that's so vastly more important. And Madam Chair, I think that we've established that it costs about $10,000 of public taxpayer money every time we get involved in one of these shenanigans. So I'll be voting no on the Oregon tartan. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Kind of good.
Well, you may change your mind after you hear Mr. Campbell.
You bet. I'll take the bet.
I never bet on things.
Any other questions or dashes of cold water?
I think we've already spent the money.
I would say that we had a discussion for years about Oregon dirt or soil. And it turned out that the geologists out there had already decided what Oregon soil was. And it turned out that it was the same one that our good representative Greenlick wanted, which was Jory soil. And so we eventually made it so that with the right water, we could have our own mud. So we have had a lot of conversations. But Jory soil is kind of where we are right now in the state. There is Jory soil. But it's an interesting conversation we have continued to have. And other people have made decisions based on whatever they think. And we've kind of gone along with it in the past a few times. And this one sounds a lot more like the metal lark, because it was approved by the governor without being approved by us. And like the metal lark.
Once you start off from with the Oregon dirt, there's nowhere you can go.
Yes, we're way up there.
Yes, Senator Fair.
May I ask the previous speaker a question?
Sure.
Yes, you may.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So what you're saying is, with the Oregon soil, to make Oregon mud, I only need to just add water.
That's right.
I can see a marketing campaign.
All right. Thank you very
much. Thank you very much for your consideration.
And now we will hear from Mr. Campbell.
Must we, Madam Chair?
We must.
So we're going to have the history of the tartans and the clans.
Oh, different tartan.
Campbell tartan.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Craig Campbell. I'm here on behalf of no one but myself, in favour of HCR 13, despite the comments by Senator Ferrioli. But let me tell you why. By virtue of my family lineage going back nine generations, when Gilbert Campbell came to Augusta County, Virginia in 1727, thence back from there to the baronets of Auchinbreck, and from them to the first laird of Argyll, all of which are Campbells, I may wear this tartan. But for many years, I've lamented the plight of those who cannot, by family lineage, claim a tartan and proudly wear a tie, fly, sash, or kilt. And many, any, may play the great Highland pipes. Any may drink the finest of single malt scotch. And any may proudly partake of haggis, though why you'd want to, I don't know, while celebrating the great poet laureate of Scotland, Robbie Burns. However, wear a tartan? Nay. What ignominious fate to be bereft of such an opportunity, just by virtue of the fact that you cannot claim lineage to a clan. But now, lo, HCR 13 comes before you, so that any in Oregon, and I care not about California, Idaho, Nevada, or Washington, but those of Oregon, may wear a kilt with this particular tartan. And as a great unifying factor of a state that often fights over whether you're urban or rural or eastern or southern or western or it doesn't matter. With this, you make all of Oregon united under a single tartan. Now, it's not as nice as the Campbell tartan. None is. But it does provide the opportunity for those who currently cannot do so. And if you're going to toss a caber, you'd better be fitted in a kilt. And if you're fitted in a kilt, you have to have a tartan. So you're really providing an opportunity for outdoor endeavours for many that are denied them now, merely by the fact that they do not have a tartan available to them. So please pass HCR 13. I realise it costs a little money to go through this process, but it's going to be well worth it when you see kilts all over the place. People like me with fantastically sexy knees, you want to see it as much as possible. And with that, I just want to thank Representative Doherty for bringing it forward, even though she's Irish, not Scottish, and for Mr. McGregor for putting it through the process in the first place. And with that, I'll answer any questions you may have.
Do you have any questions?
Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Ferrioli.
So the speaker mentioned the immortal bard, Robert Burns.
Aye.
And I just wondered if you could complete the, in dialect, the famous couplet that Burns has written about the gift that God gives us if we could only see ourselves as others see us.
Madam Chair, Representative Ferrioli, the only of the bard's work that I have in the past memorized is the Ode to the Haggis, and unfortunately I have to relearn the dang thing every time I get ready for a Robbie Burns dinner to say it. So I, alas, cannot, but I'm willing to bet that you could.
My Google failed me, Madam Chair. I would quote it. I will just say that we will be under scrutiny from our fellow Oregonians for this, as well as other frivolities that we've taken in this section.
Other questions? Thank you. Thank you.
I think you said it all.
Any more testimony on this from the back of the room? Okay. We will close the public hearing on HCR 13, and we'll take it up at another time after the Scottish and Irish have a chance to work over Senator Ferrioli. So,
yeah, now I'm sure the Irish will be on my side in this tiny brook.
Now we will open a public hearing on House Bill 2586.
Three. Madam Chair and members, House Bill 2586 excludes fees associated with filing information in the voter's pamphlet from the $750 threshold, which triggers the requirement to file as a political committee in ORSTAR. There are no amendments, and fiscal and revenue paperwork indicate no impact associated with this measure.
Okay, Representative Brayfield.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. The bill is fairly simple.
Put your name on the record.
Oh, Dan Rayfield, House Sister 16, Corvallis, Philomath, and Oregon State University. I always make a nod to Senator Robum when I do that. The background behind this bill is there were some third-party candidates in my district, as well as sitting on the Campaign Finance Task Force bill, where we really noted that folks who only want to file a voter's pamphlet statement are now required to actually do a campaign pack, which can be an intimidating process for someone who's first time running, and merely all they wanted to do is have their information in a voter's pamphlet statement. So to kind of encourage folks actually filing a voter's pamphlet statement to give more information to the public, as well as kind of reduce barriers for new candidates, that's where this bill was born out of. And essentially all it does is exempts only the $750 you spend on a voter's pamphlet statement from the limitation to actually file a pack. One thing that initially crossed my mind is that, well, is this going to decrease transparency? Because that would be a problem in my mind. Under the Oregon Secretary of State's rules and our laws, you don't actually file detailed expenditures anyway until you get to $3,500. So this merely requires you at $750 to open a PAC account, but if you're not going to spend or contribute more than $3,500 in your PAC, you're not itemizing anyway. So there's really no net issue if you're looking at, you know, transparency. So that's the bill in a nutshell.
Okay.
Question, Madam Chair.
Senator Farrelly.
So as I read the bill, it applies only to candidates. Is that correct?
Chair Burdick, Senator Farrelly, that is my impression. Yes, candidates.
Okay. Because, Madam Chair, you know, the voter's pamphlet is a powerful education tool, and it's a powerful advertising medium, and I would hate to think that people, for, against, or otherwise, on a rant, even not necessarily even connected to the issues at hand, would have a waiver and be able to incur costs for the Secretary of State in the elections process and not have to help pay the cost. So if the $750 is a waiver for candidates only, I have less problem with the issue than if it were for committees, individuals, arguments for and against, and others.
Wait a second. This is, the waiver is for adding the $750 to your total that you have to legally require.
They still have to pay for
it. They still have to pay it.
They'd still have to pay it?
Yes.
I love the bill. I love the bill.
I agree.
I don't know this guy.
Does this only exempt the first $750?
No.
Yeah, and Chair Burdick, Senator Beyer, it only exempts the $750 that is spent on a voter's pamphlet statement.
Seems like I remember an election decade or so ago when Mr. Sizemore was active, where he put about 12 voter's pamphlet statements in voter's pamphlet, which should have been, at current rates, a lot of money.
Correct, but this doesn't apply to issue voter pamphlet, does it? Like, for example, interested parties filing a yes or no voter's pamphlet.
This is only
for a measure.
Candidate?
Chair Burdick, Senator Beyer, yes, only candidates.
And
Senator Roblin.
And clarification, it really isn't a waiver of anything except in the need to report it. So it's saying, if I spent $750 and it wasn't the voter's pamphlet, I'm still going to have to file for a committee and do all the kinds of things. If I spent $250 and then put a voter's pamphlet in, so now I'm over $900, I wouldn't have to do it as long as I didn't get up to that $750 threshold with outside money.
Yeah, Chair Burdick, Senator Roblin, exactly.
Okay.
Thank you. Okay.
I think you still report. If you break the threshold, you still report. It just doesn't count for the money to get there.
You want to say that on the record?
Yeah, Madam Chair, I mean, the 750, if you exceed the reporting threshold, the 750 still has to be reported. It's just not calculated to getting to the threshold. So, therefore, you normally would not report if you're simply the 750 guy. And the good representative is right. I think virtually all of the minor candidates, one of the few things that was completely agreed upon was the minor candidates did agree on this one. Now, many other things were not agreed upon. And in fact, I must point out to you, the member of the opposing party in the opposing House agreed on more than the rest of them did. So the two of I, he and I agreed more than most everybody else did. Hence the reason campaign finance forum is not a big agenda item.
Okay, on that note, other questions from the committee? Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Is there anybody else who wanted to testify on this? If not, I'm going to close the public hearing on HB 2586 and open a work session on HB 2586. Senator Ferrioli.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2586 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Ferrioli has moved House Bill 2586 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Senator Boquist, since you most articulately described this, would you like to carry it?
No, but I will.
If you bail out at the last minute, I'll do it.
Yeah, no, I got it. I'm fine.
All right. Thank you. Okay. Now we will open a public hearing on Senate Bill 1028.
Madam Chair and members, Senate Bill 1028 permits professional licensing boards to consider and accept relevant experience in lieu of completion of a high school diploma or equivalent education requirement for the purpose of fulfilling requirements for licensure or other occupational and professional credentials. There are no amendments, and fiscal and revenue paperwork both indicate no impact associated with this measure.
Okay, welcome, Senator Manning.
Chair Burdick, Vice Chair Ferrioli, members of the committee, thank you for this opportunity. Chair, my name is James Ivory Manning, Jr. I am the senator from Senate District 7, which is West Eugene, North Eugene, Santa Clara, and Junction City. I'm here today in support of SB 1028 in its current form, and I thought I'd like to take a few minutes to provide an update on the bill. I introduced SB 1028 on behalf of a constituent advocate who we all, many of you already know, David Vane. This bill received a hearing and work session in Senate Committee on General Government and Accountability and received no opposition. It has bipartisan support. On the day the bill was scheduled for a floor vote, a few issues were brought to my attention, and I thought I'd address each of those. I believe that each of these concerns has been addressed, and there are no amendments is necessary for moving this bill forward. The bill introduced does this. It allows for state license board to consider adopting a change to their current licensing requirements, allowing for on-the-job training and experience to fulfill a high school diploma or GED requirement if this is the highest level of education required. It very intentionally states that the board may, rather than shall, consider this change. This was my intention of the bill. The concerns that were raised dealt with any potential unintended consequences that may be brought as a result of passing of this bill. Specifically, that a person who is not qualified for a state license would be allowed to acquire one without oversight. In my staff conversation with legislative counsel, it was explained that of the nearly 1,000 state license or certifications award in the state of Oregon, not one currently requires only a high school diploma or GED equivalent. In 100% of the cases, an application, a fee, a form, and often a course and or test must be completed and passed in order to acquire a license. This eliminates the concern that a licensing board would have to focus are forced into providing a license to undergo qualified individuals and face this as an unintended consequences of the bill. Because these changes would be completely optional for the licensing board, they would have made no conscious decision to waive this education requirement and could elect to impose a new standard of choosing for an applicant to determine competency in a particular skill or trade. The other primary concern raised had to do with requests to clarify that in event unintended consequences were to occur, it be placed on the record and record that the legislation will be willing to revisit the change made by the bill and amend it accordingly at a future date. This was determined to be unnecessary because licensing boards and other certification entities in the state of Oregon currently have the full authority to establish their specific licensing requirements and criteria by rule. They do not need to go to legislators to approve in the event the board adopts new rules and wish to later change it, unless, of course, it's being specifically directed by legislature. And because of the use of may, the word may, rather than shall, this bill is not directing them to act. Lastly, the question did arise as to whether the bill was necessary, and the consensus was that the bill was very specifically direct licensing entities to take up this issue and to discuss whether or not new policies, procedures, or testing measures could be or should be considered to provide opportunities for individuals who possess or possess a very specific skill application or applicable job but were not able to complete their primary education. It also codifies the fact that legislation would be supportive of such efforts and would not seek to modify undue circumstances through legislation should a board choose to adopt more expansive policies. Honorable colleagues, there are many reasons as to why a young person may not have the opportunity to complete his or her primary education. Often a person is forced to contribute a paycheck to their household and is unable to stay in school because they must put food on a table or provide for their siblings. The other circumstances may be due to disabilities or struggling with learning that keeps them from graduating or getting a GED. This bill just may go along to pave the way for someone who has a strong and proven competency to carry out a specific job and give them a chance at a career and chance to thrive rather than just struggle through life. I strongly support this bill, and I do have a personal story that I would like to attach to it. I have a young brother that's high-functioning autism. He is 50 years old now, and he has been working consistently for an organization in St. Louis called Goodwill Industries. He looks forward to going to work every morning, and he's been working there for quite a while. This has given him an opportunity to have some kind of self-rewarding and meaning, so now he does contribute to the household. I think that these types of individuals that are suffering with disabilities and stuff through bad hand dealt with them at birth should have a fair opportunity to thrive and become productive citizens in this community. And I strongly support this bill, and I certainly hope that you will support it too. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Manning. I don't notice your testimony on OLIS, and if you could provide that to OLIS, that would be great for our record.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
I did have a question about one of the things you said, and maybe I misunderstood, that this would only apply to boards where that require a minimum educational level of a high school diploma or GED?
It would apply to any of the boards that may be considering a license. And that's the key word here, it says may. So they have the option instead of the word shall, which may will be directed toward them. So in particular, this is in the skill or trades issue. For example, when I was a board of director for Pearl Buck Center, that is a center that for adults with severe to disabilities, they have a workplace in there. And one of the jobs that required is the use of a die-cast machine. Well, with that die-cast machine, the operator has to know how to tune in various levels and stuff in order to make sure they're getting the same cut. Many times these individuals don't get a chance to finish high school, so any license board that they may apply for can look and say and determine whether or not a high school education or GED is relevant over the acquired apprenticeship or skill set that the individual possesses.
But if you had a board that, say, required a college degree, would this apply to that?
Madam Chair, no, this would not apply to that because there are some technical skill sets such as a radio, someone that deals with X-ray technicians and things like that. This would not apply to those. These are just for low-level skilled labor jobs.
Okay, so basically, the other thing I thought I heard you say is that there, and I think I misunderstood, but it sounded like you said there were very few or maybe even no boards that require only a high school education. Is that correct?
Well, during my staff review of the licensing processes, sometimes education doesn't even come up, play a factor in whether or not they're considering someone for licensing or certifications.
Oh, okay. That I just misunderstood that. Are there other questions from the committee? Thank you very much. You're the, oh, Daryl Fuller. Where's Daryl? Come on, Daryl. Thank you.
Thank you. Manning. Remember, today is I Love You Day.
That's right.
I've told several people that. They all look very shocked.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Daryl Fuller on behalf of the Oregon State Association of Plumbing, Heating, and Cooling Contractors. I've never worn a kilt. I don't wear plaid. And in fact, my only association with the previous bill was I did watch Steve Martin's movie Dead Men Don't Wear Plaid at one point in my life. But that's it. We're in favor of Senate Bill 1028. There was a bill on the House side that didn't move forward that would have removed the requirement for a high school diploma for somebody who is certified by the plumbing board to install water heaters. And we opposed that bill because it was a flat elimination of the high school or equivalency requirement. We believe that's important because every once in a while you'll notice on the news a story about somebody installing their own water heater. And the reason that becomes news is because it blows up the house. Generally, they're installed with natural gas or otherwise pressurized, and if you don't know how to read instructions and if you don't have a minimum level of certain competency, we don't think you should be licensed as a water heater installer as part of a business. This bill, on the other hand, provides the plumbing board with the flexibility to take an applicant who perhaps is very well qualified to install water heaters, except for that they don't have a high school diploma. This would allow the plumbing board to review their entire book of work and their experience and their ability to do the work and provide an exception in certain cases. So the distinction between the two is the ability of a licensing board to look at an applicant and say, yes, we believe in this case providing an exemption is okay, but not a blanket elimination of a high school requirement, high school diploma requirement. So we think it's a good idea to provide those boards with that discretion because there are obviously rare but certain cases where the requirement may just be too difficult for the applicant. One example I know of in Southern Oregon is somebody who was in their mid to late 60s who was very competent and capable of installing water heaters but just hadn't graduated from high school 30, 40 years ago. And for them to go back and get a GED or a high school diploma at this point in their career was unnecessary, but they were certainly capable of doing the work. And so a bill like this would allow the plumbing board to provide that kind of exception. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions you have.
Okay. Questions? Thank you for your testimony. That's all I have signed up. Mr. Beam, we have your testimony on OLIS, so thank you. If you need to say something, you need to come up.
I've been working on this.
Can you put your name on the record, please?
My name is David Beam. I'm an advocate for special needs population in the state for the ones that can't read and write. But this is the best bill in the state that would have be done for the state of Oregon for all the families and the services for the schools. And I worked with every governor we had on this issue and really liked it. Every senator on this side, both sides likes it. So I like to see this board would get it on the floor as soon as possible. Want the people to decide both sides and get it done. Could be the first one in the nation that will be done right. I work with every governor on this.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, we will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 1028, and we will take this up at a future time. So
thank you.
With that, we are...
Oh, Madam Chair.
Senator Farioli.
I can hardly resist.
Yes, please.
I found the quote from Robert Burns that I think is germane to the issue of the Oregon...
Is that something to do with my water heaters?
Yes.
Oh, what some power the gifty gie us to see ourselves as others see us, it would fray many a blunder free us and foolish notion.
That was profound, Senator.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It was profound.
Okay.
A foolish notion to do your hot water heater, too.
On that note,
we are adjourned.
On that note,
we are adjourned.